What show is this?
590. Wow.
590.
Jeez, just a couple months ago, you had 500.
It's all a blur now, John. Should it be a blur? People keep on going, hey, so-and-so is on your show. I was like, what's the name? Still don't have it. It's like, be a little more specific. Tell me. I actually always get it when it's a construction company.
Oh, yeah?
When they tell me the construction company name, I always get it. The names, like surnames, you can't tell me surnames and I won't remember the person. I'm saying, like, and you can't, John, Mike, like, and then you get into the Portuguese names. Come on, man. It's like, then you get into the Italian names. Come on. I'm not going to be able to figure out who's on the show. You got to tell me almost the construction businesses because they're usually one-offs, right? Yeah. So that's how I know them. John, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, Manny. Great to be here. Thank
Always
you.
Always good to have you on the show. Congrats, first of all, book launch.
Yes. Really excited.
Labor and Love, huh?
After 4 years in the making, book was finally published 2 weeks ago.
It's out? Like it's gone?
It's out. Yeah, it's out. It's in stores. It's Chapters Indigo, Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, Barnes & Noble in the U.S. Yeah, Wealth Without Wall Street. Here's a copy of it right here.
There we go.
Yeah.
I like this cover.
Thank you. Yeah, you know what? I work with my editor. They came back and they completely missed the mark on it. I'm like, guys, did you even read any part of the transcript? Like, go back and work this out. So they came back with a couple of these and then I'm like, this is fantastic. And I just worked on the color and I was really, really happy about it. Cover came out great. This, I'm really happy about this book. I'm really proud of it because what you'll get in this book, you will not learn in school.
No.
You won't.
Why should you teach you all this stuff in school? We know that whole, right?
Yes.
I wish they would change that, but I mean, I'm looking forward to diving into that book and figure it out. But I mean, taking back control of your money in a rigged financial system. I mean, talk about North America.
That's a powerful statement.
It's not just American. It's not just Canadian. But now I wouldn't even go as far as it's not just North American. It's global now.
Yeah.
There's other countries in Europe that are going through the same fiasco, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all being done by design.
Absolutely.
They don't want, I guess they only want to let a certain amount of people into financial success.
Their clique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't want, because if everybody went up there, then what's the point of that?
If everybody knew how to operate like a bank, the banks, what would they do? Would need them.
Well, the banks for now, and we'll get into this on this show, they should go the way of the payphone.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw a payphone? I thought for years they were talking about how banks, like actual branches, were all going to disappear, especially with digital happening, right? We still have, I guess it's because of the generation that still believes in walking in there, like the older, when I say 60, 70 plus, old school Europeans, all kinds of people like that, they still physically want to walk in there and have their checkbooks balanced and do all that stuff and get a statement printed out for them. But I think one more generation, that's all going to be gone.
I remember my grandfather, you know, going back in the old school, like he wanted that bank book updated. Yeah. You remember the bank? I can't remember the last time we had a bank book.
I know.
Run it through. I want to see it updated.
Put it
I want to see
ATM
it
and have it printed in your hand. Yes. Like it's almost like the perforated invoicing.
That's correct.
And then it would come out and you're happy. Now, yeah. That was the evolution there. It was like getting from the teller to the ATM and the ATM would print off your bank book. And I'm like, that's dead and buried. But another generation, the bank branches will be dead and buried.
Well, a lot of the banks are actually going online now. And you know, I was having this discussion with someone and they talked about how, you know, if you got to keep like $10,000 in your account and they'll waive your monthly service fee. Think about that. Why would a bank want you to keep a certain amount in your account? It's because they rent it out.
Yeah.
They rent it out at 7, 9, 10%, or they walk it down to the Visa department and they rent it to them for 20%. They're still charging you a monthly service fee. But if you have $10,000 in this account, we'll waive it. You know, it's ridiculous that they make enough money. Have you seen the latest bank profits?
I didn't look into it, but I know for a fact,
history-wise, $3 billion in a quarter.
No Canadian bank in history has ever been in the red, period. Never been in the red. We know that we saw the collapse in 2009 in the U.S.
Yeah.
Where they got their bailouts and everything like that, but they were doing what they were doing with the housing industry. Mm-hmm. But Canada's never been in the red banking-wise. And then we just recently had three mergers where a certain MP of a certain party that starts with three letters, didn't object, which he should have objected to that merger. It should never have happened. And his response to that was, we are looking into doing and preventing that in future. And I'm like, that doesn't solve the issue from what's already been happening right now. You allowed a huge bank gobble up a much smaller bank, and now you're basically increasing rates as a result for everybody that's attached to both those banks.
Are you talking about the HSBC and RBC merger? Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't benefit us.
No, it doesn't at all. And you know what? You know, also being in the mortgage business, I used HSBC a lot because they had fantastic rates. You couldn't touch the rates. Yeah. Now, RBC doesn't even have a mortgage brokerage channel. You yourself have to walk into the branch, into the bank, or they have their own mortgage people. So as a mortgage broker, I only have TD, we have BMO, and we have Scotia. Those are the big ones. And National Bank, you know, BDB also. But when it comes to like RBC, no.
Wow.
They don't, they, you have to deal with them directly. So HSBC was one of those banks that I would take some clients to because you couldn't touch their rates as a Schedule A bank. And now they're gone. It's been gobbled up by RBC.
We got a lot to talk about, John. Yeah. First of all, let me do a couple of shout outs and then I got to do a shout out for the shirt as well too. So I want to let everybody know that June is Men's Mental Health Month. To me, it's my opinion that June for me, it belongs to Men's Mental Health. When I look at 600,000 men per year, 58,000 men per month, 14,000 men per week, 2,000 men per day, 86 men per hour, and 2 men per minute commit suicide. And we only talk about this 1 month, I think we should actually be talking about it 12 months. Men are 4 times more likely to take their own lives than women. I'm not dismissing the women. I'm just saying that there should be more of a spotlight on the men. And then I committed to myself to share some sort of post that's attached to Men's Mental Health Month every single day on my social media. And I had a follower that I respect at john.94_. And he also made a note, and I knew this already. He was like, the highest suicide rate in the indigenous community is in the indigenous community. Children under 12 committing suicide. I myself, and I'm an indigenous man. He's from Kisikus or Kiskus First Nation, and I apologize for butchering the name. Manny, can you shed some more light on this? We have this big problem in Canada and we need a voice. We're not forgotten. And I'm like, yeah, I will definitely speak up and I'll share more and I'll discuss this more often. Thank you very much for sending that message there. I appreciate it. And then I also, Adlin, thanks so much. He gave me like a bunch of stuff. He gave me a hoodie. He gave me carpenter's pencils. I'm still a fan of carpenter's pencils. I don't care about all the fancy pencils that all the young cool kids are using. He gave me a notepad, coffee mug. He gave me a bunch of stuff. So I really appreciate it, Josh. Thank you so much. And then he also sent me this really nice note. He's like, hey, Manny, thank you for doing what you do. Your show is so great for the industry as a whole and is basically a school for us small business owners in the construction industry. It's been very slow here in Edmonton lately and a lot of guys are struggling to find work. Listen, Josh, you're not the only one. Ontario's doing bad as well. Clients seem to want 5-6 quotes lately. I go, that's exactly what's happening in every province. We're not used to this being slow in Alberta. Anyways, thanks again for all the amazing guests that you provide on all kinds of education. Here's some swag, including a pen holder for your desk. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it. So, hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors, supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over 3 decades, Elastichem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Time to sign up for Phil, the free construction marketplace and load tracking app for developers, engineers, and all contractors working in the civil construction industry. One other thing to mention is business and facility listings. Phil has the most complete database of quarries, pits, plants, and depots in Ontario, including all of the big names. So if you're looking for concrete, stone, asphalt, whatever, you'll be able to find it. You can also add your business listing or claim it. It might already be on the map. Sign up for free on the website at www.getphil.app. That's www.getphil.app. You can also search Phil in the App Store. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermory, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermory, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermory to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermory difference is to hold the real thing in your hands, so visit their website today at www.thermoryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermoryUSA. John, first up, the name, no longer Durbano, you're moving over to McGuire.
Yeah.
What's the W stand for?
William.
William. So John William McGuire.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting story that you found out last year?
No, I just found out like 4 months ago that the
beginning of this year.
Yeah. That the man who kind of sort of raised me, after 53 years is not my biological father. So kind of blown away about that. But my father is actually, Jerry Maguire. Don't laugh. And he actually, unfortunately he passed, the year Jerry Maguire came out in 1996.
Yeah.
Okay. He was 46.
All right. That's young.
Massive heart attack.
At 46? Back 46. In 96?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Tragic, sad. Yeah. But it's crazy how it all happened. And it's all because of my son.
He found something or
no. So it was like back in September, October, we're sitting on the sofa. We're getting ready to watch a movie. My son says to me, he says, "Hey dad, I got something I want to tell you. Just, I don't want you to get upset." And I'm thinking to myself, don't tell me you want to wear chick's underwear or something. And he's like, no, that's gross. I'm like, okay, cool. And I won't get upset. He says, "Mom did an ancestry DNA on me and there's no Italian in me." And I looked at him and I said, "Get the fuck out of here. What are you talking about? There's no Italian in you." He says, "There's no Italian." I said, "It's a scam then. I know you're Italian. I'm Italian. I know you're my son. My grandfather, your great grandfather, came from Italy when he was a year old. So that thing is just a scam." He says, "No." So my wife gets this idea and she says, "Well, why don't we order an ancestry for you?" I said, "Don't waste the money." Well, she does it anyway. It sits on the kitchen counter for 3 weeks. I won't do it. Finally, she walks in my office and says, "Would you just spit in this thing?" No problem. 4 weeks go by. She comes in my office. She goes, "I've got your results."
And?
And I says, "Okay." She goes, she starts laughing. She goes, "You don't even have 1% Italian you." What do you think my response was? "Get the fuck out of here."
Exactly.
Right? Oh. She's like,
"So what are you then?"
She says, "You're 44% Scottish, 38% British, 8% Irish, and 8% is Wales, Sweden, Norway, like a mix."
You're a
like,
mick.
I'm like, "How is this possible?" And she says, "It's 99% accurate." I said, "This is impossible." I said, "Something's wrong." So she goes into Ancestry and she starts Googling and building the Durbano family tree going back four generations. And what was really astonishing was all of my cousins who I thought were my cousins that are now popping up under this Durbano family tree. No DNA match, no DNA match, no DNA match. I'm like, okay, this is...
These are people that you've met or you've spoken
these to? These are my cousins who I grew up with.
Yeah.
No DNA match. So she ran a history of where are my relatives on my father's side, and they're all in the U.S. Oklahoma, Tennessee, Virginia, New York, California.
How far back are we going that they immigrated from the UK to heat?
Well, it wasn't America. That. It was actually Scotland and Ireland. So mostly from Ireland. So she ran my family tree and McGuire going back to the 12th century. What was amazing and why I'm actually changing my name to McGuire is because I discovered that I actually, my lineage is royalty. I had two grandfathers that were the kings of Scotland. Yes.
Wow.
King of Scotland. And then he passed and then his son took over and he was the king of Scotland. And they kind of transformed, they kind of moved down to Northern Ireland, and the Maguires pretty much controlled and ran Northern Ireland for 400 years from the 12th century right into the 17th century. We actually have a castle. It's the Maguire family castle there, which has now been turned into a museum. But I've had great, 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 great grandfathers who have been kings, lords, princes, barons. It's crazy what we've discovered. And
you've been to Ireland?
Yeah, I was in Ireland in 2014 for golfing. Most incredible golf experience I've ever had in my life. Went with 16 guys and we played the southern part. So after discovering this, I said, okay, I've got to figure this out. So I called one of my sisters who I'm the closest with and I explained what's going on. And she called my mother, and turns out that when my mother was 17 in 1970 in the summertime, she had a crush on a singer in a band. It was a gospel band. Okay. And he was the pianist. And she waited around. She was by herself. She waited around after, you know, back then they're selling 8-tracks, right?
Yeah.
And they're just waiting at the table and they're doing
stuff.
So my father was the bass player. And my uncle, turns out my uncle, it was the singer and pianist, but they looked almost identical. So I guess when my father was walking toward the thing, she thought it was Donnie, Uncle Donnie, who she had the crush on.
Yeah.
And my father pretended to be my uncle, took her to the tour bus, and 4 weeks later, she's pregnant. She has no knowledge. Like, you know, she, I'm like, Mom, how did you know? She goes, oh, he pulled out. I'm like, what? you don't think you can get pregnant anyway. 17 back then in 1970, she's naive. She's dating my stepfather at the time, and my stepfather's Italian. And his parents, like, you guys are getting married next month. So all this time, she thought that he was my father, and turns out that he's not.
And that just went, that was the history.
That was the history. But anyway, you know, my father walked out on us. My stepfather, got to keep correcting myself. He walked out on us when I was 8. Oh, and wow. Yeah, left my mom with 4 kids. So I just think of him as a piece of shit.
Wow.
And didn't have much of a relationship. Tried, you know, as an 8-year-old.
Did you ever try to reconnect afterwards?
Yeah, or? You know, as a child, you know, you always want your father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
some sort of male figure in your
something,
life.
Something, right? So I tried to have a relationship with him. And, you know, it was okay. Nothing spectacular. I was the one, it seemed like I was the one making more of the effort to spend time with him. And he just kind of moved back into his parents' place. And there wasn't a hell of a lot of relationship. Like, you know, we kind of moved in with my father when I was about 14. My sister and I, I've got 3 sisters, 4 now. I discovered I have a sister who lives in Nashville.
Okay.
Incredible woman.
You reconnected with her.
Well, we connected actually. She didn't even know she had a brother, and I didn't know
she's
I had
younger
a,
than you.
She's 40. Yeah. She just turned 40. She's turning 41 at the end of this month, okay. But it's been,
and she's a single sibling or?
Yeah. So she was 13 when our father passed and she had no other siblings. So when she found out that she's got an older brother, it was just joyful. It was nothing but joy. And so how it got discovered was my mother told my sister the name of the guy that she thought she slept with. And so when my wife typed it into Ancestry, up pops his son and boom. Match. DNA match. So when she looked at it, it was like a 14% match. Could be half brother, could be first cousin. She does some research, tracks him down on Instagram, connects with him. I ended up connecting with the guy and says, yeah, you know, we're definitely siblings, but my uncle is actually quite famous. He won a Grammy in 1980. So he's very famous in Nashville. Everybody knows him, and a lot of people are trying to, you know, back then you're traveling and you're doing what and having good times, and who knows what kids you have. And there was a couple issues with some other people. So he thought I was just some guy claiming to be his son and looking for something. I said, dude, I'm not looking for anything. Here's my Instagram. I'm successful. I'm self-made. I don't want nothing. Just trying to find out who is my father, because this is popping up. He's like, dude, I get it. You seem legit. I'm going to work with you. I sent him an ancestry kit. He took it, comes out, it's my uncle. So he's like, for sure, my brother, Jerry, he's your dad. But I was actually going to Nashville the end of February, when now we're in the beginning of February when all this is happening. I went to Nashville, met up with him. As soon as he saw me, he's like, give me the biggest hug. He goes, you're my brother's son. There's no doubt about it. You look just like him. Yeah. And he says, you have a sister. And he says, how long are you in town for? I said, I'm here for a couple of days. I'm here on business. But he says, I want to do a dinner and you're going to meet your sister. And I got to meet my sister, and we just looked at each other, and sitting next to each other, people just couldn't believe it. You guys look identical, like our smile, the same dimples. And it's crazy how DNA is real, because I discovered that my father was in the insurance business. He was an advisor. So my father was a bass player. He was playing in the band, but then he wanted to start a family.
Yeah. So he needed a secure.
He wanted something secure. Yeah. So he, you know, he's already living in Nashville, 'cause that's the place to be when you want to record albums
and make music.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. He's like, I can't do this anymore. So my uncle Donnie, he went off and he toured on his own, won a Grammy. And my father got into the insurance business and actually was extremely successful in the insurance business. And so successful that, when he did a certain amount of volume, they gifted him this ring, which when I went to Nashville just last month for my birthday weekend, my stepmother, which would have been my father's wife, gave me a box, and she says, your father would want you to have this. And I opened it up, and it was his ring. And he won this when he produced an extreme amount of volume. And he wore it all the time. So I got it sized, and I wear it all the time now. And it's just crazy because, you know, my father discovering DNA, my father played baseball as a pitcher. I grew up playing baseball as a pitcher. He golfed all the time. I golfed all the time. It's just uncanny all the things that he did that I'm now doing, and we look so alike. It's wild.
You never had a thought about this, like for your most, like your entire life. You never really.
You know, thought. I used to make jokes. I made jokes because I don't look like my stepfather.
Okay.
And we are polar opposites, complete polar opposites. And I used to make jokes like, I gotta be the milkman's son. I cannot come from this man's loins. Mm-hmm. There's no way. We're just so opposite people. And turns out
here that, you are. That's why.
And here I am. And honestly, man, I'm really actually quite relieved. Quite relieved to find out that the man that I actually came from was very successful, very well respected, family man, just unfortunate incident, cutting the grass one day, sits on the end of the bed and just there.
Wow, so young.
Yeah, unfortunate. But you know what's really wild is that my sister and my brother-in-law, my nephew, and my Uncle Donnie are all traveling in a couple weeks here to celebrate my book launch.
That's awesome, man.
And that's why I'm to honor my father, I'm changing my name to John McGuire. My wife's, you know, I never even thought about it, but my wife brought up, she said, are you going to remain Durbano? I said, yeah, why would I change it? I've got such a massive social media following. Like, everybody knows me as a Durbano. You know what she said to me? She goes, but you're not a Durbano. Why do you want to remain?
That's not who you are at your core.
It's not who you are. Yeah. Why do you want to be someone you're not? And you know what? It just, I'm like, I look at her, I'm like, wow, you're so right. I said, fuck it. I'm going to honor my father. He was someone that was well-respected. He was special. So, yeah.
What's that process like? I guess legally you got to go through. And
yeah, so I'm just, I did all the legal documents, and I'm just waiting right now for the actual documents. And, you know, I wasn't planning on changing any of my social media to John McGuire, but I got hacked, and my Instagram got hacked, and I lost the whole account. So when we had to start a new account, I was talking with my marketing people and my branding manager, and she goes, well, now's the time to start a new account under John McGuire. So I said, I started a new Instagram under john.w.mcguire. So anybody who is actually following me that all of a sudden
you now,
where did John Durbano go? You can find me. I'm over on this new account and changed my Facebook, changed everything to John McGuire.
Perfect time to do it. I guess the one question I want to ask you is that, is your son changing it too?
That's so funny you ask. So I said to him, I said, are you going to change your name? He's like,
you started this.
and I was like, no, Dad. Why would I change my name? Everybody knows me as...
But you're not a Durbano.
That's what I said to him. I go, dude, you're 12.
Change 12. It now.
I go, your father has, you know, 30,000 people following him on Instagram, 35,000 people on TikTok. I got my LinkedIn, my Facebook. I've got bank accounts, credit cards, real estate. I've got so much that I've got to change, and I'm willing to do it to honor my father. And all you got to do is change your name and maybe a birth certificate.
You don't have to change your driver's license yet. You can, yeah. Like, it's you have nothing,
yeah,
not and, much to
and,
change.
And he's like, no, I like it who I am. I go, yeah, but your name would be so cool. Like, his name is Michelangelo. I go, everyone would call you like Mickey Maguire. And he just side-eyed me. And he's like, don't ever call me
tell
that
him
again.
Tell
I said,
him
I said, you'll be Eminem. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. And then my wife says to him, she goes, what if your mother changed her name to Maguire? Would you? He goes, oh yeah, I would. I'm like, fuck you, you little kid. Because mommy does it.
So that's the reason why.
But you know what? Yeah. When he wants something, he'll come to me. Yeah, it's always come to daddy when he needs something. But, you know, maybe when he gets older, he'll realize the importance.
So right now
of
he
it.
Doesn't want to change it.
Right now he doesn't want to change it. You know what? I'm not going to force a kid.
Has he
to
told
it.
His friends?
Like no, his close friends? No, no, I think, no, he just tells his friends that my dad's a flat earther. We had this conversation. He goes, hey, Dad, do you think the earth is flat or round? And I never actually gave him an answer. I said, well, you know, son, I says, there's very valid arguments on both sides. You know, that there's valid argument that the earth is flat. And there's very valid arguments that the earth is round. It's very hard these days to decipher what is true and what is not true. He goes, you're telling me you're a flat earther? I said, I did not say that. He goes and tells his kids, yeah, my dad's a flat earther. I'm like, the kids are laughing. I'm like, I did not say that.
Here's the question. Did we land on the moon or did the Americans land on the moon in 69?
That was all rigged.
Well, here's my thought process. They shot it, Kubrick,
yep,
in preparation if they didn't get on there. But the problem is that they did get on there and they had to release the fake version. And that's what was sold to the public. The fake version, but behind the scenes, they actually did it.
Yeah.
But they couldn't backtrack it at that point. That's my thought process. Because I think being American, the way that they would have done it, they were like, let's make two. Hopefully one of them works.
Yeah.
Because if they fail, we still have the setup.
That's a very good theory too.
So that's how I look at that theory, right?
Yeah.
Because I think we had the technology back then. And the real question is going to be, I guess, in our lifetime, are they going to shoot a version of Mars landing?
Right.
Because that's extreme variables on getting out there, and there's so much more risk, and there could be a collapse. Like, it could explode. I don't know if that craft or whatever, as much as you've seen the history of SpaceX, that he's had failure after failure after,
yeah,
until he finally has success. So for you to kind of put all the eggs in one basket and get him out there to Mars and then land on Mars, I think that they're going to make a backup, but there's no Kubrick anymore, and that's a whole other world. But yeah, there's a lot of theories going around these days. But
our government fucking lies to us so much.
I think everybody's government.
It's
globally.
So hard to believe when the government speaks. Is this a lie or is this the truth? It's very hard to decipher what is now truthful when the government speaks.
That's what goes on. It's just like, let's throw a bunch of mixed bag thoughts, and then you guys decide whether or not any of it's true or not true.
Yeah.
Leave it at that. I want to get into the book.
Let's do it.
Origin of it. I think you mentioned it before on other shows, but just give us a little brief breakdown on why you want to do this. I know that you want to help people out and you want to educate them, because obviously the educational system isn't doing it and the banking system isn't doing it. And we know why the banking system's not doing it. So is that the reason why you started looking at all these hidden thoughts that should have been shared to the general population?
Yeah, Manny. 2016, I was getting ready to go to work and I'm putting my tie on and I'm staring in the mirror, and it's just one of those days where I was suddenly unhappy to go to the office. And I'm trying to figure out why am I happy? I love my job. I love what I do. I was managing a portfolio as an advisor for 17 years, managing money. And I realized the reason why I'm so unhappy is because the advice I was giving was tailored and basically promoted by my employer, which is a financial institution, to better them and to make them money. I don't make money from my clients. And I thought, this is bullshit advice. I can't keep doing this. There's got to be a better way to create wealth and not make my employer's money. And when I looked back at 2008, when I had clients literally calling me crying, John, I plan on retiring in 2 years. I cannot retire now. My portfolio's lost 35, 40%. What do I do? My advice is don't sell. Hang on. It's going to come back. It took 5 years for them to get back to where they were before. They couldn't retire in 2 years. They had to wait another 5 years.
On top of the 5 years.
On top. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. And guess who got paid? This guy. I still got my 1% fee.
Yeah.
And I realized there's something wrong with this system. The system is broken where you as the investor put up all of the money. You take all of the risk. And if I'm charging you a 1% fee over 40 years, that's going to eat into 1/3 of your wealth. How much risk did I take? None. Nothing. How much money did I put up? None. Nothing. And I took 1/3 of your wealth. Whether it was good advice or if it was bad advice. Now you've got 2/3 left over. You still got to pay tax. There goes another 1/3, maybe more, of your money.
Depending on how high it is.
And we know it's going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And I can guarantee that. And people go, well, how can you guarantee that? It's a simple 4-letter word called math. The way that all governments, it's not just our Canadian government, all governments, the way they are spending today, they cannot keep up with the interest payments. Taxes have to go up. They have to.
Nobody's ever seen this, John. Like, I saw this recently. I paid attention to it, how it's not just Canadian American. It's global. It's Europe.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have printed so much money.
Yeah.
So it's like nobody has the data to compare it to find out what's going to happen. But something's going to happen. You can't continue these huge climbs of printed money, creating this situation. You can't continue doing this. But it's still going on. They're still doing it.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen?
There's got to be a collapse.
Has to be a collapse, right?
There has to be a collapse.
So if you have a collapse, how is it rectified? Like, what happens? You're just going to say...
Well, you know what the government's idea is? We'll just print more money.
Printing more money just devalues the money.
100% it devalues it.
Devalues it.
And what, see, when we do a service, we exchange time for dollars.
Yep.
We are creating value. There's a service in exchange. We create value. That value is exchanged with money.
Yep.
If I was just out printing money, what value got created? No, nothing. You're flooding the economy with free dollars. It's going to devalue the dollar. And this is what caused inflation. Our liberal government is full of drama teachers, journalists, people who don't have a fucking clue of what is really going on in the country. They just have a bunch of dumb ideas and go, hey, let's run with it. But you cannot print all this money and expect no inflation.
They never talk about that word inflation. They don't address it. They don't do anything about it. The latest fiasco was talking about how many homes are going to get built by 31. Which if you do the math, let's just do the math.
You got to build 50 homes a minute. You can't build 50 homes a minute.
Never in our history have we ever built that many homes that quickly.
You can't even get through the red tape and the bureaucracy inside the...
It's the whole permit, the zoning.
Yes.
It's also when you do that and then you also factor in the government fees associated with building a structure. So now I think it's 1/3 of the cost of that structure is going all to government. So it's like you buy a $1 million property, a home, some condo unit or something like that. You know, over 300,000 of that is going to the government. That's their take.
I think I think the leader of this country just loves to hear himself speak, and he's got these wild fantasies. And again, hey, if I say this, maybe half the people are going to believe me, and they're going to be hopeful, like I'm living this fantasy and I'm your unicorn. It's not reality.
But you're getting Americans coming up to Canada here, and they can't believe what we're paying for groceries. They can't believe what everything costs. They can't believe what our gas is now and everything. And I'm sure that we're going to have the same problem that California is having right now with their gas tax losing because they've got the highest amount of EVs in the entire world. And so now they're considering charging a tax on the EV. So you've convinced an entire state. They have like 30% of the state is on EVs. That's a huge amount of EVs traveling in that one state, right? So now you convince them to all buy these EVs for supposedly the climate issues that are going on in the world. And now you want to tax them because you're not collecting tax from the gas.
They don't think these things through.
If we were all business owners and we were acting like this, how long would this business survive? It wouldn't survive. Your clients wouldn't speak to you. You wouldn't have jobs. You wouldn't have a service to provide because it doesn't make any sense. Clients would just look at you like, what's going on here? Like, this makes no sense. Yeah.
So I wrote this book really to educate people and really teach them the truth about money and how money really works and stop listening to traditional advice. Traditional advice is not going to create you wealth. I'm a contrarian. I'm a disruptor. Most financial advisors are going to hate this book. It goes against them. But I don't give a shit. I was there. I can speak to that because I was on that side of the desk for 17 years managing money, giving that advice. I had to leave and say, I'm putting this for sale. Someone inside my firm bought my book of business, and I transitioned over to doing more holistic planning, tax planning, retirement strategies, using really one of the only remaining financial tools that this government hasn't attacked yet, which is using whole life insurance. And whole life insurance, everything that you do centers around whole life insurance. When it comes to tax planning, retirement planning, estate planning, trusts, everything is around that.
They can't do anything to it because they're using it themselves.
Well, they're using it themselves. And the reason why they don't even talk about or promote it, because a lot of people say, well, how come I haven't heard of this? It's because they don't make a cent off of it. They don't make any money. They make a lot of money off of promoting RSPs.
Yep.
And people say, you know, well, RSPs are a good thing. Give me one good thing about it. Well, I save tax. No, you don't save tax. You defer tax. And I say, well, do you want to get taxed on a seed or a harvest? And they're like, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, let me break this down very simply for you. If I had a corn seed and I planted it and that seed produced a corn stalk and I had three corns on that and I taxed you on every kernel, do you want to pay tax on the seed or do you want to pay tax on the harvest? Well, you go, obviously I want to pay tax on the seed. I go, so now you understand how RSPs work. Registered savings plans are taxed this way. The government gives you a tax deduction on your contribution.
When you contribute, to it.
But annually. When this grows and grows and grows and grows and grows,
they're gonna
and
get
you
it get back.
To retirement, they're taxing you on the harvest.
Yeah.
They always win, but yet people are brainwashed by the government and these financial institutions and the banks.
They push it.
Because they make money off of it. If a bank has a mutual fund that's RSP eligible, you're giving them your money and you're giving them the money to postpone drawing from it from some point in the future that A, you don't even know if you'll make it. B, not only are you deferring the tax because it's not a tax savings, it's a tax deduction at the time. You're deferring the tax, but you're also deferring what? The tax calculation. Mm-hmm. And I just told you that I can guarantee you that taxes are going up in the future. So why would you want to get a tax deduction at today's rate to pay it back at a higher rate? And a traditional financial advisor will sit and say, oh, well, you're going to be in a lower tax rate in a retirement. So, you know, contribute now while you're in the top tax bracket. When you get to retirement, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. I'm sorry. I don't want to be poor in retirement, because if I'm accustomed to living on $100,000 today and I've got $1 million in my RSPs when I retire, the 4% rule is live off 4%.
Yeah.
Why? So that you don't outlive your money. This is called the Monte Carlo theory. It's this, they call it the safe withdrawal rate. 4%. So if I'm accustomed to my lifestyle at 100,000, I get to retirement and I got to live on 4%. So now I'm on 40 grand and I got to get taxed on that. And I know tax is going to be higher. So now I'm going to be living on 32,000. I'm living in scarcity. But if I want to maintain my lifestyle, I've got to draw 100 grand. So I put in $100,000, I contributed to my RSPs while I was making 100 grand, whatever that tax rate is. Now I got to withdraw it at a higher tax rate. Who wins? Government wins. They win every time.
They're the house.
There is never a time that the government created a plan for the people that benefited the people. Never a time. You show me one time. They fucked everything up. Social Security, they fucked that up. Yeah. It's going to be broke.
That's what I was going to go to, is like, take a 20-something year old today. And I know there's rumblings about, is it France? Or who's talking right now about pushing the, it's BlackRock. BlackRock suggested that people should start looking at 80 as the new retirement age.
When the actual mortality age for a male, depending on where you are in your life cycle, is around 79. Or
who's that going to benefit if you
if you're actually fortunate to live to 82, so you've been contributing from age 20 or call it 25. You got out of school, you're working 25. You've been contributing from 25 and you work till 65. So you're contributing to something for 40 years and you're going to draw from it for 2 years. That's a scam.
It is 100%. So what do you think is going to happen? I know, like, this year alone, capital gains, that whole fiasco. And then today, was it today or it was today? The bank dropped 25.
25 beeps, yeah.
Right? So they had to do something like that.
Yeah.
Will we see another drop this year?
Probably, yeah. I think one more maybe in July or September, and then probably not another one until March.
Okay.
Again, I don't have a crystal ball. I am not an economist. I'm not saying this so you can go run out and purchase a home, because John said, I heard him on the Construction Life that interest rates are going to go here. This is only my guess. I don't have a crystal ball to see what future economic number and data is going to show. If they continue along this path, they want to see what the effects of this 25 rate drop is going to be. I think there's a lot of people, especially in the real estate sector, I think there's a lot of buyers just kind of sitting around waiting to see what's going to happen. And they know right now is a buyer's market. But the anticipation of an interest rate drop, which did happen today, I thought there was only like a 35% chance of it happening. But I guess, you know, with the economic data, there's so much pressure on them to do something because people are really suffering. They got to give them a little bit of breathing. Just loosen that noose just a little bit for all those people that are in variable rate mortgages. If they do another drop in July or September, you may start to see a real spur and people rushing out there for FOMO, fear of missing out in the market. And you're going to start to see, I mean, I've heard from other realtors that they're seeing multiple offers already starting. If they get a few more drops, you're going to see that happening and home prices going up. But listen, sales are at an all-time low. There's not much. I've got a few listings
myself. It can only go up.
Yeah, it's going to go up because, listen, if you track real estate over the history, it's always trending upward. And this is the kind of stuff I talk about in my book. It's not building large retirement accounts. Get away from that. If your financial advisor is telling you to build a large retirement account, fire them. Work with someone that's going to show you how to build large retirement cash flow. You don't want to have to live on that 4%. Learn how to purchase assets that produce passive income. Forecasted income. If I have real estate, if I got properties, I know what my rental income's coming in. if I've been investing or putting money into a whole life insurance policy, when I get to retirement, I could leverage the cash value and get a tax-free retirement income from it. I'll get a loan. And you can't tax debt. There's another way of getting guaranteed retirement income. There's different ways of building your cash flow. Just stop focusing on building large retirement accounts. That's not the way.
To banking institutions.
Because large retirement accounts benefit them. They get paid on the assets.
Yeah, so that's how it works. That's why they're telling you this stuff.
Of course
they are. My question is, a 25-year-old right now, and let's fast forward into the future, and now let's say they're 65. Let's say that the retirement age doesn't go up. It, 65. Let's stay there, right? I don't think there's going to be a pension for them, a government pension.
They'll be broke because there's
not going to be any Social Security.
The baby boomers are now getting into retirement, and you're going to have more people that are entering retirement than you are in the workforce.
That's unbalanced.
We're not procreating.
Yeah.
And this government is bringing in a lot of immigrants. And I'm all for immigration, but why are you bringing in people who are not going to contribute into the system? They're not creating businesses. They're not starting businesses. They're not doing, they're impeding on the system.
They're actually receiving funds.
Right.
I never, as an immigrant, when I showed up into this country or my parents, we never received anything.
Yeah.
We had the hand up and we pledged, allegiance to the British, and that was the extent of it. Now you're a Canadian. Thank you very much. Goodbye. We never received a check for food. We never received a check for lodging. We never received anything. So you have all the, and that's all taxpayer funded. That's just more tax that's going on top of our national debt, right?
But Manny, if you're going to come to Canada and you're thinking, I'm going to go and I'm going to start a business in Canada, you're going to do some research. True?
Yeah, of course.
And you're going to discover that if I want to start a business in Canada, if I want to take money into my corporation, I'm going to get taxed at the top tax rate, which is 54%. I just got back from Miami. I spent 10 days down in Florida. I was doing some business and just meeting around, talking to people. They could not believe the tax rate. So like, how do you guys live? It's crazy the amount of tax you pay. People are just blown away. But not only that, so you're going to leave your money inside your company. And you say, well, listen, I'm going to use my retained earnings and I'm going to invest inside my corporation, because if I take it out, I'm going to be taxed at 54%. So why don't I leave it in there? I'm going to invest. But now you invest. And the government says, well, if you're going to get passive income inside your company, your business, the first $50,000 of passive income, we're going to let you have it. But anything after that, we're going to tax you at 54% passive income. Oh, and just recently, by the way, Mr. Business Owner, yeah, we're going to increase your capital gains right from the start to 66.7%. So the individual, the new tax inclusion rate is going to be $250,000 for an individual. For a business owner, you have zero inclusion rate. Your capital gains is at 66.7%. So please tell me, why the fuck does anybody have an incentive to come to Canada and operate a business? They don't. Go to the U.S.
Set up a business in the U.S.
Set up in the business U.S. and pay your 12, 15% taxes down there.
Can you, what is it? You can get a 6-year visa to operate a business?
You can get a 5-year visa.
5-year visa.
It's an E2 visa.
Yeah.
So E2 investor visa.
You can do that as long as you prove that you're hiring employees. Is that the idea?
They want you to see, you want to offer some Americans a job.
Yes.
It takes about, I've already been looking into this. I'm looking to, transition down to the U.S. myself.
Now, is that all the states or is that just?
Well, it's about $100,000. They want to see you invest about $75,000 to $100,000 U.S.
Okay.
I've already spoken to a couple of attorneys. The best way to get down there and get this E2 faster is buy an existing business.
That's right.
Buy an existing business. You could own a business. You don't have to be a resident. You don't have to have a visa. You can own a business in the U.S. You just can't work it. Buy a coffee shop. Buy something, for $75,000. You could show up there and just see what's going on. You just can't spend more than 182 days there. You can't
be an employee of it?
You cannot be an employee. If they catch you working, you won't get a visa and they will actually escort your ass out.
Hmm.
Okay? But once you actually own a business, it's so much easier than to apply for the E2 visa because, hey, I've got an existing business. I've got existing American employees that I am paying. They'll fast track it. You might get in about 9 months. if you're going down there and saying, hey, listen, I've got $100,000, you just can't have it in your Canadian bank account. You need to have it in the US. The best place is to put it in trust with a lawyer,
yeah,
an attorney in the US.
Yeah.
Go out and secure some quotes, look for some leased property, prepay rent for a year, right? That goes against with your $100,000. If you're in construction and you've got equipment, get that fair market value of that equipment and say, I'm going to transfer this equipment into a US corporation. That goes towards your $100,000. Mm-hmm. You could have one excavator machine worth $200,000. Boom. You're in. I'm sorry, you're not in, but you now qualify.
You're that much faster.
You're that much faster. Say, hey, listen, I'm going to go down and maybe secure a couple contracts. Say, listen, I've got these contracts already. I've got a $200,000 excavator. I'm going to come in and I'm going to start working. You can apply. Now you're looking at maybe a year before you get your E2 visa. But once you have your E2, it comes with your social security number and it's good for 5 years. Once you have that, after 5 years, you can then apply for a green card.
And start that process.
Yes.
And then you become a citizen.
Then, now, well, once you have your green card, you got to have it for several years and then you can apply for citizenship. I'm actually going right for my American citizenship because my father is a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
I have a right to my U.S. citizenship. So I'm just in the process of gathering a few documents and I'm going straight to passport.
What happens on the Canadian side now? So now you're turning your back on Canada. Canada.
If you revoke your residency.
Okay, so that's the thing is that you have to revoke it, right?
You have to revoke it. Otherwise, you will still pay. You still pay tax to Canada, even though you're operating. You may not be living in Canada. You're living in the U.S. You're operating your business in the U.S. If you still have not revoked your residency, you have to pay taxes to Canada on your worldwide income.
On your U.S. income.
Yes. Yes,
it's so you're paying U.S. income tax for and whatever state it is.
And you pay tax.
And then you have to pay Canada. Canadian tax.
Yes, worldwide income. That. Yes. The only way to get away from that is to revoke your residency. Hmm. Now, if you revoke your residency, you can only spend up to 182 days in Canada.
You cannot, and you have to leave.
And you have to leave.
You have to leave for just as many days, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're allowed 182. It's 6 months less a day. But it's the same also in the U.S. too, if you're not a resident of the U.S.
Well, we're seeing it now based on the numbers. There's lots of Canadians leaving and doing that.
Why do you think Trudeau is actually trying to charge you $25,000 to leave now?
That's the next thing. So
hey,
now he's
fucked up the country,
yeah,
and I fucked it up so bad.
People are leaving.
Oh.
I want to charge you with tax.
Yeah, for my mistake.
Because you want to leave.
Yeah. How dare you want to leave? This government's fucked.
It just doesn't make any sense. Oh, I understand the reason why you want to have the increase in immigration,
yeah,
but then you didn't count the leave in part.
There's an easy way to resolve this. Bring in immigration, but bring in people that are skilled trade workers. Yeah. Bring in people that got some money that are going to start a business. Give them breaks.
And give them incentives to start
business
and keep them here.
You're giving these battery plants, these guys, billions of dollars in incentives. Why can't you get some small business owner? Listen, it's the small business owners that drive this economy. But you don't get that. He doesn't get it.
Speaking of which, John, like, why are we spending $4.5 billion on a Chrysler battery plant when I know that the government has done their numbers on how many jobs they're going to have? But we're also paying attention to EV sales are down,
mm-hmm,
dramatically down. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing Audi, I think there's another automaker, we're not doing EVs anymore.
Yeah.
We're not going down. Oh, Mercedes, I think Benz
sales are down. Thing,
so we're not focusing on EVs anymore. They're not profiting on each unit that's being sold. Ford, we know in the media has been sharing that the Lightning is not profitable for them. It's actually costly.
And GM too.
Yeah. So it's like, but we're still building this $4.5 billion battery plant in Windsor for all the jobs for product that nobody's going to buy.
Yeah, I don't see that battery plant lasting more than probably 4 or 5 years. Because once sales really go to shit, then they're going to say, hey, it's not profitable for us. And guess what? They're going to pack up and they're going to leave. All those jobs are going to be lost and the government's going to be on the hook saying, they're going to say, hey, Trudeau, thank you for that free money, but just didn't work out and we're leaving.
Yeah, because it didn't hurt. It's not hurting the automakers to do this because the majority of the money is coming from the taxpayers, the Canadian taxpayers.
Correct. They're looking at this as it's like free windfall.
Like, do we know what this mountain of debt physically looks like? Like, do we understand that you have a prime minister that has more than doubled the debt of all previous prime ministers combined? Just do we have a physical analogy to compare that to on what this debt and how it's spiraling out of control? And doesn't matter who's the next PM. Doesn't matter who's the next PM for the next 50 years. This is not going to be solved.
The only way to solve this, there's two ways to solve this. One, you've got to cut. You have to make cuts.
Where are you cutting? What are you cutting?
That's the problem. And the liberals are saying, well, if you vote for Pierre, it's going to be cut, cut, cut. Well, something's got to happen because you're an out of control, spoiled little brat that has no concept on what a budget is. Again, he got on camera and he said, I don't think about monetary policy. No shit. This is why you just keep spending, spending, spending. The spending is buying votes, but who are they buying votes from? They're buying votes from the low class and some of the middle class. But some of these people are waking up and going, hey, someone's got to pay for this. And it's probably going to be me. But then he came up with this whole capital gains inclusion rate saying, oh, no, no, it's not going to affect the middle class. We're going after the wealthy. Oh, so you want to target and punish them because they took all the risk and they may have been fortunate enough to do well. And now you want to
nest egg for
and now you want to take
years?
It from them. Think about the 80-year-old grandma who bought a cottage in Muskoka in 1950 for $200,000. And that Muskoka cottage has been around the family for decades and enjoyed family vacations and family weekends. And now that cottage is worth $3 million. This poor lady is now going to get hit with a massive capital gains tax unless she gets rid of it by June 25th, which is probably not going to happen.
And is that that's what's going on right now?
You're getting
a lot
of
people right now that are offloading a lot of stuff to avoid that date.
Yeah, by June 25th.
How is it affecting foreign interests coming into this country?
It's probably going to hold stuff. Who wants to invest and pay 66.7%?
Nobody.
Like this.
So now we're losing our growth. We've seen it already. We're on a downturn.
This is such a socialist fucking agenda. Spread the wealth. Let's take from the rich and give to the lazy fucks. Sorry. Most of the people don't even want to work. I talk to so many people, they say, I can't get people to work for me. I can't. I'm even offering $20 an hour. I can't get people because they want to show up at 11. They want to break from 1 till 2 and they want to leave at 5. I can't
because they have other interests to do.
They got other interests. They just don't want to work. There's no interest. Why? It's I can live off the government. I'm getting $2,500 from the government. Why do I need to go work for you? Oh, and when I do work for you, I want cash. And there's no better industry than you know yourself, the construction industry. Yeah.
Everybody
wants to be paid cash and they're taken from the government.
The cash construction industry right now, ever since this government started, has just been dramatically going up. If you've been doing everything perfectly legal in construction, tax-wise, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
If you're not balancing a cash act, you're not going to grow. And I'm just telling everybody, you should be seriously doing cash. And that's the only way for you to survive. Not even grow. Survive is the key word.
But the government's pushed it to this point.
Yeah. We didn't need to be to this point. We could have, like, we talked about the housing and the targets that they've set and that fiasco about we've created a catalog and all this other crap. And I'm like, you guys don't know how to solve this problem. And I hate these hot button topics like labor shortage, affordable housing, sustainability. I hate all this shit because it's unrealistic. You know, if you really want to solve the labor shortage, what do? You're right. As much as it's a joke, the whole Ali G scenario about how he told government and parliament he only wanted to bring in certain people that were allowed to come into this country, people that were going to benefit the country. And that's what we should be doing at the door there. So if you want to enter this country, what skilled labor do you have?
Yep.
What have you come from? And I'm not just talking construction, medical.
Yeah.
We want those doctors. We want these people to, because guess what? Doctors are leaving this country too because they are the rich. So they are being taxed these amounts. And as a medical person, why would you stay here?
You should be giving tax incentives to the medical professionals.
Yeah.
But they're not. They want to tax them to the highest degree. It just honestly makes no sense. And you're right. If you're going to come into this country, contribute.
You have to contribute. So you have us know what's the contribution.
I'm all for immigration.
Yeah.
But the right type of immigration.
Yeah. We can't just let people come in and then take advantage of the system.
Exactly.
You want to come into this country, you need to provide, like many people have provided for generations, and they've tried to build wealth to pass it down to other generations, right? And that's the problem right now. We're seeing it with the baby boomers. They're looking at it like, we have nothing to give to the next generation. They will not receive anything now. That's probably the first time in Canadian history that they're not handing anything back to their kids. Yep. And their kids. And that's a scary thought.
Very scary. And the only way that really, if you want to pass down something, again, it comes back to life insurance. You can leave life insurance policies. And the way I look at it is, you know, if you've built up this nest egg and you're afraid of spending it all, either you want to leave something for your kids. Again, I go back to my clients and say, why do you want to do that? You, who earned this money? Who had to sacrifice and save? One goes, I did. So who should get to spend it? Should be you. But what if I was able to give you the permission slip to spend it all and still leave the amount of money that you want to your kids?
So you can transfer it?
No, you get a life insurance policy. So that life insurance policy gives you the opportunity, the permission to spend all of your money. And then just when you die, you leave something for your kids.
John, here's a thought. Do you think that we have generations right now, the younger ones, that are just counting on this windfall?
Absolutely.
As part of their life, financial life.
I call them professional waiters.
That's what they are.
They're professional waiters. But
the
waiters.
Boomers didn't have this. Like yeah. They're the ones that built the wealth.
They're the ones that came into this country, the Italians, the Portuguese, the Irish, and they built the infrastructure.
The younger argument is that, well, you guys did it at a time when homes were $40,000, when cars were $10,000, and your annual wage was $20,000. So it was realistic for you it was only like a 2X or a 3X max to pay off that house. Now we're dealing with an 8X, 10X to pay off this house, right? Yeah. So we've seen that argument about what interest rates were in the 80s when they were in the teens versus what the interest rates are now. And we know it's worse now based on what the housing prices are. But you can't keep faulting that. And I think you've got a lot of people in this younger generation waiting for this financial. This is what's going to set up my life. But then ask yourself, this younger generation, what are you going to do for your kids now? Because you're going to take that wealth that's going to be gifted to you. And then all of a sudden, you're going to consume it all. And then you won't have anything to give to your own children. So eventually it's going to stop.
It's so funny that you bring this up because I just had this conversation over lunch with a tax lawyer. And he said there was a study done that the money lasts about, you got it, three generations. That's it.
Depends on the second generation.
Yes.
They get lazier.
Yes. And more dependent.
Yeah.
And they feel this sense of entitlement, like, I'm entitled to this. No, you're not. What did you do to earn the right to have this money? And this is the problem with kids today. They look at their parents and go, oh, I don't have to work hard. I just had this conversation with my son. My son goes to an all-boys private school, and it costs $50,000 a year to send him there.
It's crazy, I know.
Okay. He's never been to a public school. And I'm not knocking the public schools because I went to public school and I turned out okay. The difference is 40 years ago, the public
school. It was a different public school.
They're not teaching all the woke shit and it's okay to be a cat and put a litter box over there. No, fuck that shit.
Yeah.
No. I'm not letting my kid to go to public school and have that curriculum shoved down their throats. In the private sector, they don't dare to do that because parents have a say. And parents should always have a say. But
they're a consumer.
That's right.
Paid into a service.
Yes. And he was studying for his very first exam. He's in grade 7. And he didn't know how, he was very nervous. And this whole year we've been talking, he's really into his gaming, and his mother and I, we've had to take his computer away for like a month at a time because he would just focus on that and his grades weren't there. And he said, get your grades up when you get your computer back, but let's not make gaming a priority. And that's the problem with today's kid, is they're so focused on these games, they don't want to study. And he said, Dad, I'm just trying to get 80%. Like, why are you not trying to do your best and get 100? You know what he said? If I get 90%, I'm going to have to do grade 9 math next year, not grade 8 math. Do you understand the thinking in this kid? He doesn't want to do well because they're going to push grade 9 math on him and not grade 8.
But then you'll excel.
They just want to do the bare minimum. So I told him, I said, son, I'm just going to say this once because you've heard me say it before. If you just want to be average, I'll pull you out and I'll put you into public school and I'll buy a Rolex for myself next year.
Cause that 50K can go elsewhere.
And I'll buy a beautiful Rolex.
You think a lot of parents of our generation are looking at that now as an option, saying, listen, the money's not going to be there for you. We're going to spend it. We're going to use it.
I think some of them are. And I looked at him and I said, listen, if you think that I'm going to leave you something, I'm going to leave you with something. I'm going to leave you with the skills to go out and be a hustler and to earn an income. I'm not leaving you with my wealth. It's just not going to happen because if I go, your stepmom, my wife, is going to get it.
Yeah.
Not you. So I don't want you to think that what you see is yours. It's not, son. But I want to teach you and want to leave you the skills to go out and so you can hustle and you can do even better than me. And I don't know why you don't want that for yourself.
So not to penalize them, but if you are an older person and you have built this wealth and they are in waiting and you don't want to give them this wealth, where would this older person leave this money? Because obviously charity. You don't. Okay, so you don't want to give it to the government.
Nope.
But the problem with charity, and we know this from nonprofits, most of their money that comes in is administrative use, right? So it's like you're paying for staff to do this. You're not really contributing to the cause that's associated with it. I'm not blanketing all charities that way, but a lot of it is covered from the admin staff, their fees, their salaries, and everything like that. And when you have this cause that actually needs to be given to them, right? So you're still like saying the charities?
I guess you got to find something that's dear and close to your heart, right? If you've had a loved one die of leukemia or cancer, you may want to do that. I mean, look at Carlos Slim out of Mexico, one of the richest men in Mexico.
Okay.
Look at Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, Bill Gates. I don't even like saying that guy's name.
No, I know.
But these guys say, we're not leaving our money, even Jeff Bezos. I'm not leaving it to my kids. It's going to go to a foundation. Unfortunately, Gates built his own foundation. He suckered a lot of these guys to leave the money there. And
Melinda left, right?
Yeah.
She's no longer a part of it.
She saw the scam.
Yeah.
She saw what he was up to, right?
I still have faith in Buffett.
Buffett, yes.
He said, what is it, 99% of his wealth is going to go to the foundation. He's not leaving.
No.
Right? He doesn't see the value in leaving it, right?
And going back to the charity, I don't know what it is today, but a few years ago, I was actually in the tax shelter business. And it was part of a business to reduce your taxes. You know, I'm always looking for ways to promote, you know, reducing, minimize your taxes.
Yeah.
And it was discovered that charities, out of every dollar that is sent to a charity, take a guess of what percentage actually has to go to the cause.
I'm going to say it's less than 10%.
11 cents on the dollar. You're close. 11 cents on the dollar.
11%.
Yes. 89%. So when I discovered this,
that's the problem I have with charities, right?
Right. And you see these commercials, support Ethiopia, support Africa and all these hungry. Do you know, I can't remember. It was, what's one of those big charities that promotes, feeding the kids and stuff?
UNICEF or?
Yeah. One of those guys that were, you know, the CEO salary is like $750,000.
That's the other issue that I have.
And they show these starving kids so that you feel empathy. Oh, let me write a check. It's just going to cost you a dollar, a cup of coffee a day. Write us a check for $30. Meantime, 89 cents is going to the administration. And this guy's $750,000 salary.
I know.
It was disgusting.
I was having, and I'm trying to get the answer for this because I was having a conversation with somebody about OYAP, which is the program to get more youth into trades, right? And they had a budget of, they were fortunate enough to get $77 million. For 2024. And I want to find out how many kids are actually going through that program and staying in construction, going through the whole hurdles. Because I assume they're out of construction in less than 3 years. And if you spent that $77 million and a large portion of that is going towards staff to just facilitate all this stuff in the province, one province in Canada, the numbers don't make any sense. You should be turning out millions of kids at $77 million, right? So I have issues with that. But right now, it's just those hot topics. It's just the buttons where it's like, we need more kids to come into construction. We need more kids to do this. We need to do all this. But every governing body that I speak to, they keep popping up and reaching out to me to come on the show. And I'm being more of a dick about it. I'm just being blunt. I'm like, how many kids have gone through your program? How many kids are still in construction? And I'm going to get to the point now where I'm going to go, give me their names and their contact information. I'm going to call every single one. I'm going to speak to them. And if I find out less than 5% are still in the construction industry, then your program is not a success. And your funding should be cut off. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Because your objective is not about getting kids into the industry. Your objective should be keeping the kids in the industry. That's what it should be, because we don't build a Canada and we don't build all these homes if we don't have people in the industry to build them.
Yeah.
And we're not incentivizing any of these people to build them.
It's easy to get them there. Can you keep them there?
I want to keep them there. Yeah. It's like, I'm not married, but you maintain a healthy marriage because you provide, both of you put into it.
Yes.
Chris Rock. It's a lot easier to carry a couch with two people than it is one person. So both people have to contribute into it.
You got
to
feed it.
Yeah. So it's the same thing with any of these government programs talking about labor shortage and building more homes. You need everybody to be on board and paying into this and focusing on how to grow this. But you can't, nobody ever brings up a soundbite about, okay, we had 1,000 come in, 999 left after 2 years. I recently saw someone talk about, he was like, they had 100% success rate of all the females in a training course for construction, all passed 100% success, all of them. They went to the job site, all 100% quit, left.
Why?
They weren't interested in it.
Really?
They didn't like it. Mm. But they all succeeded in the prep course. So they got in. Succeeded the course to get into the industry, got into the industry, and obviously weren't told exactly what the industry is all about, and then they all left. That's not a success in my eyes.
Yeah.
You failed because you didn't let them know what the industry is really all about, and you possibly didn't look at what they could have contributed to. Because when I talk about getting into the construction industry and staying in the construction industry, it's like there's so many avenues associated with it. Like, you can get into construction on so many different, like, talk about the gamers. Gamers could be crane operators, could be heavy machinery operators, because they're the best at navigating all these components that are attached to these machinery.
You talk about gaming, just not construction, but there's a NASCAR driver, William Byron.
Okay.
And William Byron took over the number 24 car for Rick Hendrick, which was Jeff Gordon. I was a big NASCAR fan.
Yeah,
I went to every Daytona 500. I followed every Sunday when Jeff was racing. I watched it or I taped it. Then Jeff retired. And I was like, oh, okay, I still watch it. But William Byron took over the 24 car. Guess how he got the job? He never raced a car in his life. He was racing on video games. He was racing, I can't remember what it was called, but it was like a, it was a driving, it was a league. And he was dominating the league, but it's like virtual. It's, you're actually, you're in a, you know, like a flight simulator, right? He dominated it. Like, this kid's amazing. Stuck him in a car. Kid goes out and he's winning from gaming.
I believe it.
He's a name. You know, drives a 24 Rick Hendrick.
So there's opportunities out there, right?
By gaming, yeah.
And then the thing is, now you're making income. And the last thing you want, I've never met a single person says, yeah, I'm perfectly fine giving up half of my earnings that I've been providing for my family or myself to the government that's squandering all this money. Like, I really think that we should be taking money back that's just been handed to other countries and start focusing on building this country. Mm-hmm. It's sad that indigenous communities don't have clean drinking water in 2024. It's incredibly sad. We should be focusing on making Canada, every square inch of dirt, amazing.
Especially to go back and consider that it was originally their land. You know, the government just took it. They expropriated it.
Yeah. And they're not even contributing to helping them.
Yeah. But it's okay to send billions of dollars over to Ukraine.
Whichever. You pick it. Like, he's given out so many countries so much money, so many tax dollars, so much printed money. And then he's leaving us with a tax bill that's going to be insane.
And he's gonna get voted out. And he's going to say, yeah, suckers. And then Pierre's probably going to come in. And he's going to take a look at the books and going, I need not 4 years. I need 14 years to get us out of this mess. And it's going to happen at the end of 4 years. The liberals are going to look
attacked.
At, they're going to say, you've done nothing. Well, no one could have done anything with what Trudeau left me with. It's a complete mess. It's a complete fuckery.
How do you see Canada 20 years from now, financially speaking?
A third world country.
That bad?
I think so.
So Canadians are not really going to try to do anything about it. Most of them are going to leave.
You've got business owners that are wanting to leave. You've got medical professionals that are leaving. Ford just announced they want to build a school here for doctors. Why? So we can educate them, give them incentives, and then so they could leave and take jobs.
Why does Ford want to?
He's.
Oh, you mean Ford? I thought you meant the automaker.
No. Doug Ford. Doug Ford wants. He's already proposed to set up and build a medical school here. In Vaughan.
Why don't we vet the immigrants that are coming in here and find out if they're actually doctors from other countries?
Right.
And they want to move here.
Give them a qualifying exam.
Exactly.
Do you know how many Uber drivers
are doctors?
That are doctors, engineers, that are professions in their country, but they can't get a job here?
Because they want them to start from the beginning and go through the whole process.
Yeah, why are we giving them a qualifying exam? Why don't we give doctors incentives? Like, give them a tax break, right? Banks, if you came to me for a mortgage and you're a medical professional, I can qualify you based on your projected income. Not what you earn today, but your projected income. Now you're helping to meet the needs of a medical profession. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't the government give them, say, hey, listen, if you're going to earn $500,000, we're not going to tax you at 54%. We're going to give you a break and maybe tax you at 49% or something. We're going to do something for you and keep medical professionals here. This is why you've got overrun hospitals. You've got people dying in emergency rooms.
And waiting for surgeries, people waiting, dying.
And when the doctor actually finally sees you, it's not even thorough. It's a... Look. Okay.
Prescription, go on.
Here you go.
Do you remember back in the day, 80s, 90s, when America used to always talk about how our healthcare system is amazing?
Top notch. Now it's, you know who's got a top notch healthcare system? Cuba. Top notch.
People go in there to have surgery.
Yes. It's really unfortunate.
Here's my thought process is that I think every country should be looking at other countries that are really excelling in whatever department it is and start duplicating that. So if we're seeing top-notch doctors and surgeries happening in Cuba, what are they doing? Can we learn some lessons? Can you teach us? Can you come up here and teach us how we should set this up? And then do that for every single industry. And guess what? We can all thrive. Every country can thrive that way.
Warren Buffett was interviewed. And they asked him, said, if you were president, how would you solve the deficit?
I remember that.
He said, I could solve the deficit in 5 minutes. If you're in office and if you run a deficit of more than 3% of your GDP, you are not up for election. That's it. You're done. Watch how many government agencies start balancing their books.
They would. They have to.
They have to.
I also think
that it's a brilliant idea, but it will never pass. It will never pass because, you know, they all just give money away. And I think nowadays most people become politicians so they can enrich their own lives. So, I mean, I'm sorry. How does Trudeau get a $100 million net worth on a $350,000 salary in 8 years? How does that work?
I have an idea.
We all have ideas and we're probably closer to the truth than we think.
Here's a thought, John. I think that if you become a minister and at the end of the 4 years, the state of the country is worse, you're not allowed to run again. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
Simple.
If you're in deficit,
if you're coming into here and you're asking people to vote for you and you want them to follow you and you're a leader, but now you've turned things on a negative, made things worse, then you automatically are not allowed to run again. You don't get that opportunity.
I think that is a fantastic idea, and I think that would solve so much.
Because the thing is, that's not on the books, that's not on the table, and so they just run again, and then they cause more damage. And I'm like, you know what? I don't hire somebody to build a house and do a task on a job site, and if they've made a mistake over and over and over, and it's just cost me more and more money, they're not coming back to continue working for me. So if that minister and the PM is made things worse, you don't get to run again.
It shows you're incompetent.
Yes.
You should be running surpluses.
You have 4 years now to improve it. You don't have 4 minutes to improve it with a sound bite and a media bite. You don't get that opportunity. So it's like it basically leaves you to show your worth. Proof is in the pudding kind of mentality, right? Yeah. But we don't have that. And we're not allowed to speak out against them either. We can't formally complain against them. How is that a democracy? How can we not? How does that, like, that just makes, we've seen history now. Here's our history in the last 5 years. What all the things to do to make this country worse. Start taking notes, everybody.
Yes.
None of this stuff can ever happen again. We should not happen again. So it's scary.
Very.
Are you thinking
it's that? Scary for my kids.
It's going to be a really challenging generation and what they're going to confront at that point, right? I'm thinking, like, you're launching this book now, has all kinds of great ideas in it. It's going to help people to look at their dollar differently, right? And figure out how to make this dollar $2 and $3 and so on, right? And are you thinking in 5 years that that's going to have to get rewritten now because of what's going to happen or what is happening?
Yeah, it may have to get revised.
Yeah.
I'm actually planning my second book, focus more on retirement. You've got here, now what? You know, it's
what
easy.
What if you live 30 years past retirement?
People are living longer. People are saying now with advanced treatment, with stem cells and stuff, people could probably live up to 120 years old. What happens then? Like, where's this income going to come from? People are working now in their 70s, not because they want to, it's because they have to. Yeah. And that's a sad state. So my book is going to teach you how to avoid that. And if you are going to work in your 70s, it's because you want to, because you enjoy what you're doing. Yeah. I always say, build a life that you never have to retire from. What I do now, I see myself even at 75, doing because I love it. I love helping people. I love to educate people. It's amazing how the more people I help, the better I become and the more fortunate I become.
But then you love what you're doing. So
I love what I'm doing.
So it doesn't feel like work. It's not a 9-to-5. You're not waking up going,
I don't have to retire from this.
I got to do this. And then you're worrying about how much tax am I paying now? You know what I mean? Like, we shouldn't be having to worry about any of this stuff. It's not fair. I don't care how you slice it.
I'm in the process now of writing an online digital course.
To educate people. On the retirement side or just in general finances?
Just anything. It's going to be more of building up to the retirement, right? And then I'll do another course based on another book. It's like you want to climb Mount Everest, right? So if you want to climb Mount Everest, what are you going to do? You're going to hire a Sherpa.
Yeah.
And he's going to get you up the mountain. Do you think more people die going up the mountain or die coming off the mountain?
Coming off the mountain.
Coming off the mountain. So you've gotten up to retirement. Congratulations, you're here. How do you come down the mountain safely? That's what my book is going to be about. How do you get through retirement? You've got this money. Now, how do you get through it without outliving your money?
It's the race that you talked about on previous shows. Like, that's one race you do not want to lose, right?
No, no. But if you follow my advice, you build passive income through buying assets, not building large retirement accounts. You don't do that.
So you just have this money just always replenishing itself, and then it's assisting you in your years.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know my moniker, I brought you some swag. It's the live 50-30-20, yeah. Right? And you need to live by that. It's a code. 50% of your income needs to go to your fixed expenses and your needs. Okay. 30% is toward lifestyle and wants. That other 20%, that goes to your savings and investments. But you need to start with the 20% first. The moment you get a check, you got to take 20%, put it away. And what's left over is that 80%, and you need to arrange a budget. And I know it's a scary word, and people hate that word budget because nobody likes to budget. But you got to learn to live on 80. And if you can't live on 80, stop looking for ways to reduce. Look for ways to produce. Mm-hmm. Don't focus on reduction, focus on production. Get yourself a side hustle. Find something that is symbiotic with what you're currently doing that you can make an extra income from. I've got my wealth management practice. I've had that for 25 years. I've got a mortgage business. I've got a real estate business. These are all my side hustles, but they're all symbiotic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. My mortgage business, I never ever thought the amount of money that I could possibly make in a year from simply referrals is mind-blowing. And then my real estate business. I'm not a full-time realtor. I get referrals. I get people call me, hey, John, can you list my place? I do 4 or 5 transactions a year. The average transaction is probably 15 to 25,000. Mm-hmm. It's a great side hustle.
Yep. It's income coming in.
So my advice to your listeners is if you can't live on 80, focus on producing more. Don't reduce.
Just always make more money.
Listen, but you got to put that 20% away. You have to, if you want to have any chance of having some sort of financial future. Because the journey along the way, if you're living through scarcity and you're not putting that 20%, at least 20% away, folks, you're going to live through scarcity through the rest of your life. And you're going to be living on beans and rice like Dave Ramsey
says. That's actually going to make you expire sooner. The stress and the anxiety associated with it. Of course it is.
Yeah. And listening to traditional advice and building that large retirement account to only live on 4% is like you live through scarcity trying to put the money away and then going, oh shit, now I got to live on 4%. So I'm going to live through scarcity again. That sucks. You are now the broke millionaire.
Here's a question for you. Your rule is 50, 30, 20. What's our Canadian government? What's their breakdown?
They don't save anything. They save nothing. Again, I'll quote our prime minister. I don't think about monetary policy. Well, it's kind of important.
Obvious. It's clearly obvious if you want to try to grow a nation that you should be thinking about monetary policy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but your bank and your books are not going to balance themselves.
I don't think that he would actually be approved if he were to go through the system and put down exactly what he's doing and contributing and what debt ratio he has.
Can you imagine campaigning and telling people I don't think about monetary policy? No one would vote
ran
for
on
you.
That on the first one where he was talking about the budget would balance itself, right?
And he ran on legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing is that you had an entire generation that bought into that. I wasn't one of them. I didn't buy into any of that. The last two elections, it's not who I voted for. No. Simple as that. But
you got to change. You got to change up what you're doing. You know, if you want to be successful, take a look at what successful people are doing. If you go into any city, anywhere, I don't care where you are, if you look at the most tallest, most beautiful, most luxurious buildings, they're owned by who? Insurance companies and banks.
It's true.
So do what they're doing.
Yeah. Because those buildings are really expensive to build.
Yeah. And furnish.
Thanks, John. Share the information again so everyone knows that the idea. And the
yeah, so my new Instagram account is johnw.mcguire. That's Instagram. Facebook is John Maguire. TikTok is John Maguire. LinkedIn, John Maguire. If you want to get a copy of my book, you could go to...
I'll put the link in the show notes so yeah. Anyone could just hyperlink it and go to it.
And you can actually go to my website. It's johnwmaguire.com.
Awesome, man. Congrats so much on the book.
Thank you so much for having me on for the third time.
Yeah, it's the third time now.
This is an honor. I feel like a regular guest.
You haven't beat the record. I think it's Gary who's been on the show 6 times.
Wow.
Talking trim carpentry.
Amazing.
And one show about cancer, his survival cancer story, which was really good. That was an amazing show. That was show number 300. That one I remember.
Wow. Well, it's always an honor to come in and speak to you and your listeners and to educate. And thank you for having me. And I look forward to seeing you at my book launch party. Oh, totally. I'm looking forward to that.
It's going
to
be fun.
A lot of fun. Some cigars.
Yeah.
Yeah, got to get Mike DiMartino there.
Mikey,
check your email.
Boy. Yeah, he's a busy boy these days, but he's still questioning because I had a conversation. He was like, "What are you hearing?" It's like almost I'm like an ear to the ground now. He goes, "Dude, it's slow. People are slow.
Yeah,
simple as that. The economy is like nobody's going to be spending. We don't have a extreme 2x4 cost or anything. Lumber is still reasonable, but it's expensive to build, and it's just you've got a lot of kids coming into the industry that there's no work for them." And I already have told people they're going to leave. So they've been training in the programs, gone through all the government assistance, been into trade school, and now they're reaching out to people like me. I need to get a job. Can you put me in touch with somebody? Sure. And then here's a bunch of people and they're contacting them. I don't have any work for you. So what is this whole group of kids, what are they going to work? You think that they're going to try to continue finding construction work? No. They're going to be like, do you want a vente? Do you want a tall? That's the reality.
I'm a barista.
Yeah. It's scary times ahead, and everybody thinks that this is really bad. I'm like, this ain't even the beginning.
Mm-hmm. We have to see a few more interest rate cuts to get that market hopping again.
Yeah.
Where builders will say, okay, we're not going to sit on the land anymore. We're going to start going out and doing something. And I think if the government just cut some of the red tape and cut some of these development charges and stop being so fucking greedy, you'll see more buildings and stuff going up because there's a massive, massive shortage. And I don't know how Trudeau is going to meet his...
He won't.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
I love that I had Bocci on the show and when he was the CEO of the housing, I made that bet with him. And he still owes me a sick dinner because I told him, you're not going to hit this. And then he quit. But I do like that Pierre did talk about how if you don't meet these targets and talking about each premier, you're not going to get any government funding. Mm. So there's a little bit of accountability, but I'm also still wary of any new politician coming into play and being voted in based on these merits and then all of a sudden not making them happen. So the proof will be in the pudding at that point when he does get in October of next year, unfortunately, and he delivers on all of that. You know what I mean? So we watch premiers have to reduce the gatekeeping and start increasing the building of those gates.
Yeah.
Basically, I want to see it. Hopefully, I'm not disappointed because Canada could be a great nation.
Could be.
John, thank you so much, man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Manny.
Good to see you. We're out of here.